Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw was even more perfect than he usually is, and not quite for as long as a lot of people would have liked. We're going to talk about the game, we're going to talk about the controversy, and just talk all about the Dodgers' 7-0 victory over the Minnesota Twins. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now so you will never miss a day, because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder. My co-host over there is Vince Samperio. And Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, which is a good thing, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So again, please subscribe. And, you know, I may need to amend that, because Vince is today covering the Dodgers' home opener as credentialed media. Vince, are you going insider on me?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to make the shift to insider. That way we can have the insider and the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue.
So you're the insider and I'm the smart fan?
Sweet. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm good with that setup. Today is a special two-episode day. If you are watching or listening, you may have noticed that your feed has a second episode. I just got done recording a crossover episode with the guys from Locked On Reds to talk about the upcoming four-game series with the Reds. So we're not going to talk any about that series in this episode, but I just recorded a really good episode with Jeff and Steve from Locked On Reds about that. So that will also be in your feed. I think we're going to post this one for a little bit later, like a minute later than the other one. So it's the most recent one in your feed, because I figure I think some people will be interested in the Dodgers Reds crossover, but I think a lot of people want to talk about Clayton Kershaw, you know, or want to hear us talk about Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. Clayton Kershaw was the talk of not just Dodgers, but Twitter, social media, everything in general. He was the talk of the day. And since the game happens so early in the day, at least on the Pacific time, that's how it is. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we know the details, and if you don't know the details, I don't know what you were doing yesterday, but Clayton Kershaw went 7 perfect innings, 13 strikeouts, 80 pitches, got removed. After that 7th inning, Alex Vesia came in and gave up a hit to the second batter, so he won up
Tim Hill.
Yeah, he's no Tim Hill. I won up Tim Hill at least. Gave up a hit to the second batter. The Dodgers obviously ended up winning the game, but obviously the conversation was not amongst it. I don't know what you want to start with, Jeff. Obviously,
I want to talk about Kershaw. We can talk about the controversy second segment. You know, I think Clayton Kershaw deserves to be the lead story, because Clayton Kershaw was awesome, and in a way that we haven't seen him be out. His fastball, that may have been his slowest average fastball velocity in any game of his career. I mean, he threw some fastballs that were 89 miles an hour, and I think he topped out at like 91.3 or something, but really he was in the 90-ish mile an hour range the whole game. But his slider was awesome. His curl, he didn't throw it a ton, but when he did, it was really sharp, and he even threw a changeup, got a swing and miss on a changeup, but really it was that slider. And for whatever reason, I don't know if Andrew Heaney's slider from the night before was still weighing on the Twins' minds or what, but I mean, Kershaw, stuff wise, he really demonstrated what you and I have talked about, Vince, about how you don't have to throw that hard if you have your complementary pitches working, because a 90 mile an hour fastball is plenty if you have the best slider in baseball and one of the best curveballs in baseball. And oh, by the way, I also added a changeup. You know, he mastered everything on the mound. And it was crazy good and crazy fun to watch.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at his breakdown, he had 80 pitches, 41 sliders, 26 fastballs, 11 curveballs, 2 changeups, had 17 swings and misses on the slider. So 17 out of 41 of those pitches were swings and misses. And I think what we're seeing, so like you mentioned, the fastball he was sitting at, his average was 89.9. topped out at 91.8. But I think what the big difference is, and you look at his year-over-year average, and he was, you know, less than a mile per hour slower just fastball-wise, but he also was 1.8 miles per hour slower, you know, slider-wise. And this is what we've talked about with him and the slider before, is if there was a time and point where his slider and his fastball were the same, were going, you know, both 90, 91 or 89, 90, and then that range. And it wasn't enough of a difference for him to, it wasn't moving as much and it wasn't much of a difference to hitters. So he was giving up a lot of home runs and, you know, on pitches that weren't seemingly hanging sliders, but they were sliders that maybe didn't move as much and were the same as fastball. So the hitter was really looking for the same speed no matter what. And the curveball obviously would be a slower speed, but that one starts out high for the most part, and you can kind of recognize it a little bit sooner, even though if you might not hit it, but you might recognize it. Whereas yesterday he had, you know, almost a 4 mile an hour difference between slider and fastball. Obviously the slider was moving, and it was, you know, I think that's where he's going to win. And that's where we talked about this with Julio the other day. You know, if he doesn't regain that velocity, he can still be an effective pitcher. And this is exactly what we're seeing from Clayton Kershaw. And, you know, not just effective, but yesterday, I don't think I've had that many texts during a Kershaw start since a long time. And not just, you know, obviously perfect game-wise later on, but even early in the game when he was racking up all the strikeouts, I was getting texts from everybody wanting to talk about Kershaw.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been perfectly fine if after four innings, he had seven strikeouts. Like, if he called it a day there, that would have been a totally successful first start of the season, considering what Clayton Kershaw's been through. It would have been great, you know, but – you know, the fact that he went seven was awesome. And, you know, you mentioned the difference in velocity between the slider and the fastball. And we've seen over the last couple of years, you know, sometimes he throws that slider a little bit slower. And what he did on Wednesday was do that consistently. And I noticed even the curveball looked a little, like, when I think Clayton Kershaw curveball, I think 74 miles an hour, you know, and I would guess, you're looking at the numbers, I would guess the average was closer to 72 on Wednesday.
72.3.
Yeah. Because it was, and he threw one that was only 70,
yeah,
you know, and maybe even just below 70. It was, you know, and that if you make those adjustments, you know, yeah, the fastball is going to be easier to hit now. He still locates it really well most of the time, and so it's still not easy to hit. But when you have to adjust for a slider and a curveball and a changeup, well, guess what? That 90 mile an hour fastball sometimes is going to feel like 96 on you. Because if you're sitting slider or sitting curveball and you get a fastball, you're going to be late on it. And yeah, it was a masterful demonstration of pitching ability that, you know, it showed that Clayton Kershaw, I don't think he's quite to crafty lefty status yet, but if he does get to a point where he has to be a crafty lefty, I think Clayton Kershaw has a plenty long career ahead of him as a crafty lefty.
Yeah, you think crafty lefty and you think a little bit smoke and mirrors type, you know, Jamie Moyer, Rich Hill, those guys are what you would say crafty lefties. I think Kershaw is still a guy that, you know, his slider is still one of the best sliders in baseball, regardless of anything. He's not, you know, it's not like him trying to pull a fast one on you or anything like that. He's not reducing himself to, like, short pitch, quick pitching people, anything like that. He's legitimately has that slider. And it's just, if he can locate that fastball, which he did yesterday, you know, hitting the corners. He hardly ever throws a fastball anywhere in that, you know, middle range of the plate. It's always on the corners. It's always to try to either steal a strike or get you to maybe foul one off. And then he's, as we saw yesterday, more than half his pitches were sliders. So, you know, he's obviously leaning into that, and that's what he has to do. And like I said, if he has that differential between fastball, slider, you know, even though it's an 89 or 89, 90 fastball, you have a 90 fastball with the 86 slider and then a 72 curveball. Those are big differences. And if you don't know exactly what's coming, it doesn't matter how fast the fastball is coming in, because you have no idea what speed this ball is going to come, because there's three different speeds coming at you. And if he makes it in the change, you know, he said he threw two, I think he threw 11 all of last year. So he's on pace to break that for sure. And if he can add that changeup and get a few swings and misses here and there, you know, it got me really excited about what Kershaw could be. Obviously, this is one start. He could go out there next start and, you know, not have a great game, but this is what we know that can happen now, and that's something you can look forward to.
Absolutely. It was seven masterful innings, and a lot of people are upset that it wasn't more than that. We're going to come back in a minute. We are going to talk about the controversy of him getting pulled during a perfect game. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. Hey, betonline.net is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we are back. Thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen. We really appreciate it. For your next listen, you might want to check out the Locked On Now podcast. There's recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so Vince, Clayton Kershaw, he was perfect through seven, through 80 pitches, and then he came out of the game. And there are a lot of mixed emotions about the, I've been surprised by the response, Vince. And I don't want to give away exactly how I feel. I assume you know how I feel, but I want to hear how you feel before I give away too much. But tell me how you felt in the moment. And if, you know, it's been 9 hours now since the game ended when we're recording this. Have your feelings changed at all in the last 9 hours? You're muted.
My feelings were always, I hate this situation. Like, the decision, you can justify it. It makes sense. You know, if Kershaw's smiling in the dugout, I'm fine with it. You know, he's the one that, this is his legacy. It's not our legacy. It's not anyone else's. If we've seen him fight back before for, you know, remaining in a game or coming out too early, he seemed at peace with it. He knows what it is. But I just hate the situation because it's annoying. Like, Kershaw, he hasn't thrown a perfect game yet. He has the no-hitter. He's never done it before. And for it to come at this time when he's not built up yet, when, you know, first start and everything else, coming off an injury, and it's just the situation was annoying. I'm fine with the decision. I don't, you know, love the decision just based on the fact that I don't love the situation. And that's really what it comes down to. I do think that, you know, there was a lot of people going above and beyond and, you know, putting it on Dave Roberts. And you know, I'm sure you're going to mention, but this wasn't just Dave Roberts' decision. Like I said, if Kershaw had shown anything inclination of being angry or upset, he did very well of hiding it. And I think he was probably similar to me, like mad at the situation, but he couldn't do anything about it in the moment. That's just the way it goes. And I think he kind of realized, like, man, like, I really want to. And he said it after, I wanted to keep going, but, you know, that's an individual accomplishment. And they even asked him, like, oh, how would, you know, is your mindset change? If you were younger, would you have still felt the same way or whatever? And he said, well, if I was younger, I would have been built up to at least 100 pitches. So I think it just sucks. Like, now the lockout, whatever, we had got over it because we're still going to get 162 games. Now I hate the lockout again. You know, now I hate everything else again. And it's, you know, but it's also a matter of just, I felt like it was kind of divine timing type of thing. Like, if anything, like, that would have been the reason for me to say, you know what, go ahead, Kershaw, like, go back out there, because, you know, we saw the offense open it up when they needed to. We had the Gavin Lux play that happened at the end of the seventh inning. Everything seemed to be lining up. Like, Kershaw's never been the fifth starter in a rotation before. He happened to be the fifth starter, happened to start this day. You know, maybe a matter of, he said he went home early, got a nice, you know, night's rest, but everyone else that was there at the game, all the offensive players, they got home late, had to be up early. So I think it was just a combination of a bunch of things. And it's just like, damn, why did it have to be that way?
Yeah. I've been accused, and rightfully so, of being wishy-washy at times. Brandon Johnson, I hope you're listening or watching. This is for you. Vince, you said the decision is justifiable. You were fine with it. I think it is undeniably, unquestionably, absolutely 197% the right decision. And I believe that anybody who is upset about it is wrong. Who thinks it was the wrong decision, I think they're wrong. Even if Clayton Kershaw was totally healthy and totally built up, expecting him to throw 105 pitches in his first start would be borderline. If you look in the last 20 years, very few pitchers have thrown 110 pitches. Steven Wright, a knuckleballer, threw 118 in his first start of the season in 2016. He's the only guy in the last 5 years to hit 110 in his first start. I think you would have to expect, you know, when Kershaw and Roberts sat down at the end of the sixth inning, and they made this decision together. That's a very important point. They made this decision together, and they looked and said, okay, I'm at 69 pitchers right now with three innings left. Realistically, there was no way that this was going to get done in less than 110 pitches. And they came into this game with a plan of 80 to 85 pitches based on Kershaw, short spring training, didn't pick up a ball till January, coming off a season-ending injury last year that had him contemplating retirement. And he's been on the injured list the last 5 years. This is not young, healthy, perfect Clayton Kershaw, who even then it would have been questionable. This is a Clayton Kershaw who their goal, they have a plan to keep him healthy the whole season. And it would be the height of folly to throw away a well-crafted, well-planned out, intelligent plan to chase after a personal accomplishment that was unlikely to happen because, as Clayton Kershaw himself said after the game, his slider wasn't nearly as good the last inning or two that he pitched as it had been earlier in the game. And so the most likely outcome is that Kershaw loses the perfect game and the no-hitter in the ninth inning, and you just had him throw 98 pitches for no reason. The second most likely outcome is that he gives up a hit to the first batter of the eighth inning, and he comes out anyway, no harm done. I think his chances of completing the perfect game were like 10%. And is it really worth throwing away this plan that you have to hopefully keep Clayton Kershaw healthy so that he can be on the mound in October? Is it worth throwing away that plan for a chance at a personal accomplishment for a guy whose ticket to Cooperstown is already stamped and sealed and delivered? Absolutely not. It was absolutely the right decision that Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw made together. How's that for wishy-washy?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's, and you
the
saw,
situation does suck. I agree with you. You know, I would have loved to see Kershaw throw a perfect game.
And it's funny because, you know, the discourse for the most part, at least of people I saw, you know, Dodgers Twitter, we kind of know the deal. Like we understand what it was. We've seen it happen twice before. Like we saw Rich Hill get pulled in a perfect game. We saw Ross Stripling get pulled in a no-hitter. Like we've seen it. We've come to understand it. I wish it would stop happening so early in the year and it would happen later in the year when people are built up. But it's a matter of, you know, the Dodgers know what they're looking out for. Clayton Kershaw knows he came back for this specific reason of trying to win a World Series. So, you know, he knows what the deal is. But it was just funny to see, like, the outlandish takes of, you know, Dave Roberts should be fired and, you know, it's a prisonable affair or, you know, jailed or whatever. Reggie Jackson forgot that Dave Roberts played in the major leagues. You saw a lot of former players and you understand like that's competitive. Realistically, you know, if Dave Roberts said Clayton Kershaw, this is 100% up to you. And, you know, I don't know if Kershaw is for sure saying, you know what, I'm not going back out there, but he also realizes and he's a bigger person than, you know, maybe some of these other guys that were tweeting are because he knows what the goal is. Him throwing a perfect game in April. Yeah, that's cool. But him throwing a perfect game in April, that just, you know, maybe could potentially jeopardize him pitching later in the year. He's not about it. I saw a lot of people saying, you know, is 20 to 25 extra pitches really going to jeopardize his career, really going to blah, blah, blah. And we don't know, but I'd rather have the, you know, what's for sure not going to jeopardize it, him coming out. And that's really at the end of the day what it comes down to. But yeah, the situation is just, everything was there. This was like that one where you're like, okay, this is the one. Because there's only been, what, 22, 23 perfect game. This would have been,
I think,
the 23rd.
26 or something.
Oh, yeah. So less than 30 in the entire history of baseball.
You know what? There's only been two guys pulled from a game after seven innings while throwing a no-hitter or a perfect game. Yeah. This is more rare than a perfect game.
Yeah.
By a lot. Yeah. Fergie Jenkins said on Twitter, you would never take me out of a game when I'm throwing a perfect game. Well, you know what, Fergie? Clayton Kershaw would never get arrested for possession of cocaine at the Toronto airport. So you guys have a couple differences, Fergie, if that is your real name. You know, one last point I want to make, Vince. You mentioned we don't know what would happen. Eric Burns tweeted about Nolan Ryan, threw 13 innings and 987,000 pitches in one game, blah, blah, blah. Everybody brings up Nolan Ryan when you're talking about this because he pitched for 27 years. He was a freak of nature. But for every Nolan Ryan, there are Sam McDowells and other guys who even less well-known than Sam McDowell, whose arms fell off. Dodger fans of all peoples recognize this. Fernando Valenzuela and Oral Hershiser both were Hall of Fame talents who did not pitch long enough in their career because they were overworked when they were young. Sandy Koufax retired when he was 30 mostly because of overuse. Don Drysdale only pitched 15 seasons because of overuse. You know, so many examples. And I pulled up a search of guys who I picked 270 innings in a season. And you know, just as a kind of a proxy for pitching a lot, you know, because people always mention Nolan Ryan. And the guys who threw at least 270 innings in a season the most times in their career, at the top of the list, not surprisingly, you have a lot of really good pitchers. You have Hall of Famers, you know, Warren Spahn, Phil Niekro, who was a knuckleballer, like Gaylord Perry, Fergie Jenkins, Burt Blylevin, Steve Carlton, Jim Palmer, Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson. You got to get down to number 12 on the list, Mickey Lolich, before you don't even have a Hall of Famer. Well, guess what? Mickey Lolich was another guy I'm talking about who had that peak, that talent, but his arm fell off. And then when you get down farther, you look at the guys who only did it one or two or three times. You got guys like Andy Messersmith, who a great Dodger. My mom named a dog after him once, but he wasn't as good as he could have been because he was overworked. Mike Cuellar, Sam McDowell, Claude Osteen, Dean Chance, Larry Jackson, Frank Larry, Larry Jansen, Fernando Valenzuela, Dennis Martinez, Randy Jones, all these guys who at one point were throwing a ton of innings. And then their careers didn't last as long as they should have because of that. And so, no, we don't know if 25 more pitches would have messed up Kershaw's season. But like you said, we know for sure that coming out right then, at the very least, is going to be a neutral decision and is much more likely to be helpful than harmful. And that's the goal here. And so, I don't know. It seems to me like people who are invested in the Dodgers' long-term success, for the most part, at the very least, understand the decision, are okay with it. And some people are, you know, who are less wishy-washy like me, are adamantly in favor of it. And it's the people who are unbiased observers. I just want to see a good game. They think, well, how can you take him out during a perfect game? Well, we got bigger things in mind than a Clayton Kershaw perfect game, you know, or more like the Clayton Kershaw broken up perfect game in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
There was actually offense in this game too. There were some hitters on the Dodgers side. The Dodgers scored 7 runs again, had an offensive breakout, and it's going to be fun to talk about. So that's what we're going to do when we come back in a minute. We want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. All right, we are back. Thanks again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. It means the world to us. And the Dodgers offense, it started out good. They got to face Chris Paddock. You mentioned on yesterday's episode that sometimes all a struggling offense needs is to face Chris Paddock. And that seemed to be the case. They put up 2 runs in the first inning and left the bases loaded. It could have been more. And then they put up another run, knocked Paddock out of the game after 4 innings, even though he didn't walk. I don't think he walked anybody, but they made him throw close to 80 pitches in 4 innings and knocked him out of the game, and then really took advantage in the eighth inning. After Clayton Kershaw was done pitching, and we were pretty sure he was done, he was sitting in the dugout without a jacket on, and the Dodgers hit 3 straight homers. Cody Bellinger, Gavin Lux, and Dodgers team leader in home runs, Austin Barnes, hit a home run. And then in the ninth inning, Max Muncy, his first home run of the season. So for a team that only had 1 home run in their first 4 games, they hit 4 home runs late in this game. And all in all, a good team victory. And a lot of good stuff about the offense in this game.
Yeah, the guys you wanted to see, well, not all of them, but 2 of the guys you would like to have see hit a home run, or at least be successful at the plate, Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, 2 guys that ended up hitting a home run. And it's funny, well, you know, I had tweeted after that first inning, Bellinger had struck out, and Paddock was just blowing 93-mile-an-hour fastballs by him. You know, I had tweeted out that, you know, he just looks overmatched. He doesn't look like he's even close. I think Mike Petriello had tweeted out that Cody Bellinger's faced the highest percentage of fastballs this season, which, you know, in the past, when you think Cody Bellinger, you think of him flailing at a slider or curveball or something down and in. But now he's getting all fastballs, still not hitting. It's not like, you know, velocity wise, it's not always guys throwing 98 that is blown by him. 93 was getting blown by him. So he looked, and I don't know what happened, but he ended up, you know, hitting the cup, or he went down and got a off speed pitch, which was more probably on Paddock than then if you would have thrown another fastball inside, he might have got him. But then the one that he did hit was off a fastball off of Pudge's son, off Derek Rodriguez. So that was good to see. Hopefully that, you know, we know confidence is part of it. You can see Bellinger after every time he strikes out, he just doesn't look comfortable. He doesn't look happy. Hopefully this will get him going. Gavin Lux continued to stay hot. You know, he added a home run. Austin Barnes got in on the action. Freddie Freeman actually had two of the five hardest hit balls other than the home runs, and his weren't home runs. So that's good to see. So it's a matter of, yeah, Chris Paddock and Derek Rodriguez, probably two guys that you would want to face. They're not that great and they don't throw that hard. But also, you know, you're going to face a lot of guys like that throughout the year for some of these teams that aren't good. And what you should do is pound them. And that's what they did yesterday. And it worked out. And, you know, regardless of the boom or bust, whatever you want to say, that's back-to-back days with seven wins.
Yeah, and that's officially booms, as we defined yesterday. The Dodgers have boomed two games in a row, and I still think Cody Bellinger does have issues with the high fastball. You know, like you said, Paddock for some reason threw him a changeup, and then the fastball that he hit for the home run, I don't think it was as high as Rodriguez wanted it, and so I think there's still some work to be done there, and that was the case last year too. You know, and we did see Cody Bellinger, he hit. Was it that home run against the Braves in the NLCS? It was off a high fastball, and it was kind of shocking, you know? Yeah. And so we know he has it in him, and hopefully, like you said, this confidence will come through. Max Muncy, the confidence, hopefully he almost hit another home run earlier in the game. Off the bat, it looked like it was going to be a home run. It was basically just a little too high, and, you know, I think he hit it just over 100 miles an hour off the bat and like a 38-degree launch angle, and if that exit velocity is a little bit higher or the launch angle is a little bit lower, it's a home run. Instead, it was a fly out all the way to the wall in right field. And, you know, it was good to see him start to, I feel like Muncy hitting one home run might just be what opens the floodgates for him to realize I can still do this. I can still hit home runs. I've still got crazy good power and you know, and hopefully that'll be the start of good things from him. You mentioned Gavin Lux. It was kind of interesting. He actually struck out three times. I think his first three strikeouts of the season, but he also hit a home run. And so it was a good game for him, despite being, you know, in some ways his worst game of the season, and just kind of shows that there's a lot of different ways you can contribute to a team offensively.
Yeah. I think the other thing with Bellinger too is, you know, we know the Dodgers don't need him to be MVP again. You know, they're going to have a good team regardless. They don't even need him to be all-star, really, potential-wise. I mean, defensively, they just need him to be Gold Glove potential or Gold Glove caliber, but they don't really even need him to be all-star hitting potential. It's just a matter, can you run into the ball once a week? You know, can you give us 25, 30 home runs where you just happen to swing and you run into the ball and it goes over the fence? That's really all you kind of need out of Bellinger. And, you know, obviously him getting on base here and there with walks, whatever. We saw him solo base the other day. That's what he really needs to do in order to contribute to this offense. And, you know, we've seen a couple of those now. Obviously, it's not going to be, you know, he could go back out and strike out three times tomorrow, and we're kind of sitting back in the same spot that we were. But the very least, we know that there's a potential of him running into a ball and it going far. Where I've seen people want him to change his swing back to kind of what he was in the postseason, and, you know, that one home run against the Braves notwithstanding, in the postseason, Cody Bellinger wasn't going to hit a home run unless it just happened to line up exactly how that one did. And we saw that he was hitting a lot of singles, a lot of slap hits, you know, a couple doubles that just happened to get down the line, but nothing with really any true power. And I think, realistically, for Bellinger, it's get back to that first swing. You're going to get mistakes here and there, and if you can punish mistakes, that's good enough for me, and figure that out. And then just the rest of the offense. I mean, Trey Turner's really got down that chopper to the left side, getting on base. He's, I think, three times now he's extended his hitting streak with that. I mean, he ended up getting other hits in other games, but three times now he's extended his hitting streak with that. I would like him to hit the ball a little harder. He seems to be out in front of a lot of stuff. Maybe, you know, I would like to see him change up a little bit, but you can't, you know, argue with him getting on base and everything else. But the offense, I think yesterday's the game, the offense you want to see. They scored early with the top of the order. They were supplemented later by the bottom of the order, and they put up seven runs. And like I said, if the Dodgers are putting up 5 to 7 runs every game, they're going to win over 100 games easy.
Yep. Yeah, and even though they didn't walk as many times as they did in the first game of the series, their patient approach was really showing, and it really had a big impact on the game. And so it was great to see. All in all, it was easily the most fun game of the season so far. Between what Kershaw did and what the offense did, everything about it was great, even despite all the consternation and hand-wringing and a little bit of frustration on all of our parts that at the situation, if nothing else. So great team win and good way to come home for today's home opener against the Reds. And yeah, Vince, you got anything else about this game?
No, like I said, it was fun. If we have to be up and watching Dodger baseball before noon, I think that's how the game should go.
Absolutely. I mentioned the home opener today to start the four-game series against the Reds. And as I mentioned at the top, today is a two-episode day. There is a crossover episode, me with Jeff Carr and Steve something from Locked On Reds, talking about previewing that series. It was fun talking with them, and we actually did talk about the Kershaw thing. So if you want to hear my non-wishy-washy opinion in slightly different words, that's the first segment of that episode. But yeah, we talked all about that series coming up. So hopefully you're all going to get out to Dodger Stadium this weekend. I finally decided tonight I'm not going to. It was up in the air. I still thought I might hop in the car tomorrow morning and drive 661 miles to Dodger Stadium, but I'm not going to be there, unfortunately. But I will be there soon, hopefully, and hopefully all of you can be there and enjoy Dodger Stadium for me. But we want to thank you all for listening to Locked On Dodgers regularly, making us your first listen every day, watching on YouTube, whatever you're doing. Please keep doing it. If you're not doing it every day, do it a little bit more, you know? If you have friends and family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, tell them about the show. Maybe they'll like it too. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. If you want to send us any notes or comments or questions or anything like that, you can also email us at lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail or a text message at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you're going to be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.